Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, good morning. What day is it? It's August 3rd, 2008. That makes this Solder Smoke 89. Good morning from Rome. Back from the Amalfi Coast. I guess we should start out with some Solder Smoke Italy travelogue this morning. We just came back from a short vacation trip down to one of the most beautiful parts of Italy. I have a picture of it up on the blog. One particular shot that I thought would be of interest to radio amateurs and knack victims because of its, it just raises all kinds of possibilities for antennas and that kind of thing. The Amalfi Coast it's the southern part of the Sorrento Peninsula. The Sorrento Peninsula sticks out into the Med and forms kind of the southern pincer of the two pieces of terrain that form or that kind of bracket the Bay of Naples. It's the peninsula, the Sorrento Peninsula is south of Naples. And when you come down from Rome, the highway cuts right across the right across Naples, and so you find yourself driving along with Vesuvius, Mount Vesuvius of Pompeii fame off to your left, and the Sorrento Peninsula approaching on your right. Then out you go onto the peninsula and cut across to the southern side, and that's the Amalfi Coast, Amalfi. It's named for the city of Amalfi, which is the main town on that part of the peninsula. We stayed at in a place called Positano, and that's what the picture on the blog is of. Positano is a beautiful, looks like it started out as a fishing town, but now has become a real tourist attraction. But even though it's a real tourist attraction, I must say it was very friendly. Everybody was really nice. There was none of this tourist trap atmosphere that you find in many of these places. People were really, really very kind to us, and we had a great time. It's spectacularly beautiful. It's very vertical. The whole thing is built up on the sides of some very steep terrain, and so you get this very vertical sensation. And when you want to go to the beach, it's more of a vertical thing than it is a horizontal operation. You'll see what I mean when you look at the picture. But we had a great time. I didn't really do any ham radio. I brought a little shortwave receiver with me, a little Sony receiver, but I wasn't picking up anything. And I suspect that those big cliffs behind me were serving as some very effective RF shields. And perhaps there just wasn't too much activity to the south. But I didn't hear too much on the shortwave bands. But then again, I didn't listen too long, and I didn't really try too hard in terms of the antenna. Somebody wrote in when they saw the picture and said, oh, wouldn't it be great to put a vertical up on the top of that thing? I said, yeah, but be quite a long run of coax. It looks like we were close to the top from the perspective of the picture, but really we weren't. We were down sort of midway up on the cliffs. The terrain is really quite challenging. So I don't think that that Positano would be the best place to be a radio amateur. It would probably be some frustration. There'd probably be some frustration there in the antenna department, but it was a lot of fun, and I thought I'd throw mention of that in there since for some strange reason guys do keep writing in saying that they like the Italian travelogue bit portion of the show. But now we get to the real subject, and that is of course the knack, amateur radio, and our struggles with the disease that was first diagnosed in young Dilbert. QRSS, some of you guys I know are getting more deeply into this. Some of you are probably groaning right now thinking that you've heard quite enough of this, but I'll talk about it just a bit more. QRSS, the low and slow mode of QRP operation, I continue to work on it here and learn more about it. It's really, I think, a very interesting communication system. I've been transmitting with what's known as QRSS3, which means that the dits are 3 seconds long. And this week I was looking at VK6DI's webpage. I'll have to put a link up to this on the blog, but in the meantime, he's easy to find. Just Google VK6DI. And I noticed that he has some comments on his page about the effective bandwidth of the Argo software sound card filtering system that many of us are using, or many people are using for their QRSS receive systems. And VK6DI reports that using the Argo software by i2PhD at the QRSS 3 speed, it has an effective bandwidth of, get this, 0.34 hertz. That's pretty good. 0.34 hertz of effective bandwidth. So I'm not quite sure exactly what mathematical magic was used to come up with that, but it certainly sounds good. And it certainly seems plausible, too, because when I'm looking at the screens, the online displays of the grabbers out there, very often my little 20 milliwatt signal is visible, but it's visible very, very close to the to other SIGs. And when you look at the frequency column there on the display, very often I'm within 1 hertz of within 1 cycle of these other signals, yet on the visual display, they're completely distinct. And I know that if you were listening to these things, there's no way that you could distinguish them. The tones would be, to the ear, identical. But visually, when you spread them out there on the kind of on-screen display, signals that close together are easily distinguished. And so thanks to VK6DI for providing that information. It's just another reminder of how powerful and interesting the QRSS technology and software is. Listen, speaking of powerful and interesting, I have an idea. There's a lot of guys have been writing in and commenting that we don't have too much QRSS activity among U.S. hams. This seems to be mostly a European thing at this point. But with some, you know, some participation by Australians and we have Lawrence in New Zealand. I'm sorry, in Singapore, working on it, and Vern in Nova Scotia, but not too many U.S. or Canadian hams involved in this. I have a proposal here, guys. This is a way we can kind of combine forces and specialize here a bit. One thing that I've discovered about QRSS that makes it very different from your more ordinary ham radio activities is usually when you're setting up a new station for a new mode in ham radio, you have to think of both receive and transmit systems. Yeah, you need a receiver and a transmitter. Well, not really with QRSS. And let me explain. When I was looking at the systems, it suddenly occurred to me that because of the online grabbers that are out there, I already pretty much had a QRSS receive system. I could take a look at the receivers of stations up in Belgium and in northern Italy and other locations without any problem. But anyway, so I pretty much had a receive system. I also realized that the receive systems were more software-oriented and more computer-oriented, whereas the transmitters are really, really simple. They're just real QRP, very low power transmitters hooked up with any kind of keyer that will give you the real slow speed CW. My K1EL keyer did that just fine. So what I'm proposing here is that if you're a software computer guy, if your area of expertise and specialty lies, and your specialty is in that area, then I would suggest that you start out by working on the receive side and setting up a QRSS grabber and putting it online. This would be interesting for you, but it would also be very interesting to your fellow NAC victims, because it would give all of us another view of what that portion of the spectrum, 10.140 megahertz, looks like. And it would allow everybody to basically take a look through your receiver and see how their signals are doing and whether they're arriving at your location, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if you're like me, not really a software, a computer version of the NAC victim, and if you're more hardware and perhaps more analog oriented, then I would suggest you concentrate on building a transmitter. And there, all you really need is, as I said, a QRP transmitter capable of putting out, 50 or 100 milliwatts. There's one guy, one group of hams in Northern Italy right now that are running 1 watt, one full watt on the QRSS frequencies. And gentlemen, let me tell you, it's raising some eyebrows. It's 1 watt. They're just really they're just ether busters. They're getting some criticism. So all you need is 20 milliwatts or 100 milliwatts and a keyer. The challenge on the transmit side is calibration, making sure that your new creation is actually transmitting within the 100 hertz window that we're operating in. But that's certainly within the technical capabilities of the diehard NAC victims that we have out there. So anyway, there's my modest proposal. That is, computer guys, work on the receivers and put some online grabbers up. And hardware analog guys, start out with the transmitters and put some of these QRSS MEPT, manned experimental propagation transmitters, on the air. I think that'd be fun. I think it'd be great to hear more of these signals from North America. Of course, we're doing this at the worst possible time. I'm reading the propagation reports, and I think that we got through the month of July with only a few days in which there were any sunspots visible. I'm jealous of the guys who were in the QRSS game 3 or 4 years ago, when your 20 milliwatts would yield reception reports from down under and other exotic locations. It's not really happening now. Every day I can see my signal up in Belgium on ON5EX's grabber. But so far, and it has crossed the pond. Vern in Nova Scotia picked it up at least once. But so far, no down under reports from me, no reports from Singapore. So if you have grabbers in those locations, please listen up for the 20 milliwatt QRSS3 CW signal from I0/N2CQR. Right now, I'm transmitting QRSS3 CW, and some of the guys on the Knights mailing list have suggested that I switch to an FSK system, where basically you just have the keyer turn on and off of a Raktor diode that keys in a little bit of extra capacitance in the circuit and raises the frequency by a few hertz. So instead of seeing the CW dots and dashes appear along the screen, you would see instead the kind of a square wave with the length of the the dots and dashes would be visible in as the signal switches up when the key goes down. You get the picture, I'm sure. So I might switch over to that. They say it's easier to copy a copy when somebody is trying to pick up the a really weak signal from a long distance away. So I might give that a try. Let me see what else we have on the list here. A number of things here. First, some good news. Last week I mentioned that it looked like Dan's Small Parts was getting back in operation after an absence caused by an unfortunate accident that that Dan suffered. He's back. Just a day or so after I said that last week, word started coming in that Dan is back in business. His catalog is online. He's got all kinds of extra special offers there. And I must say, as I look through his catalog, it really occurred to me that this is a guy who is really serving the QRP community. And his description of the components that he's selling, he very often makes references to their usefulness in QRP rigs. So I don't think he's a QRP-er himself, but he's certainly providing a great service to the QRP community. So here's another proposal. As Dan recovers from this accident, I'm sure he could use a little extra help. So if you put in an order for Dan, he hasn't said anything to me about this. This is completely my suggestion. I would suggest that the Solder Smoke community members perhaps consider throwing a few extra bucks in there for shipping and handling for Dan. It's got to be the handling part of it's got to be difficult when you're recovering from broken shoulders. So, and it haven't been out of business that time must have created a real extra workload. So it must be a tough time for Dan, and he's been good to us. So maybe throw a few extra bucks in there for shipping and handling when you're sending an order into Dan's Small Parts. All right. The audio filter. Last week I asked for some audio reports to determine whether my very unsophisticated bathroom drain plug baby wipe audio filter has succeeded in knocking down the popping sounds on the peas. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. I think it has. I think it's had a real impact. It's like I said, I did not go with the nylon stocking solution that many had suggested. This is a kind of a variant of it, but I think the idea is the same. You just put up a screen there so that burst of air on the P sound doesn't make it to the mic. I'm told, however, that my S's, kind of a bad sound on the S's, is still there. And I asked for suggestions on what bits of hardware I could, what plumbing pieces I could use that might be of use there. And I've got some suggestions. I think all of them were a bit tongue-in-cheek, so we won't actually be using them. But I've got some ideas. I'm going to try to use the equalizer on the Audacity software to see if I can get that to knock down the that kind of annoying, I guess it's a sibilant S sound up there. Knock down some of the high frequencies. So I guess what I'll do is for the first couple minutes of Solder Smoke, I will use the equalizer to knock down frequencies above, I guess about 3,000 hertz or so, and see if that helps at all. Let me know. We've got now, this is sort of in the linguistic cultural department, Mike Alpha Alpha 1 Tango Juliet, our man in Vermont, the poet laureate of ham radio, the guy who brought us the tunnel diode transmitters, and who, by the way, I believe is working on a QRSS version of the tunnel diode transmitter. We're anxiously awaiting news on that project. Mike sent me a book a while back, one of G3VA's excellent series of books, extracts from his technical topics column in the RSGB Radcom magazine. Really fantastic stuff, and thanks to Pat for those columns. Thanks again to him. And also thanks to Mike for sending me the book. But in the book, there was something in there that I thought was really interesting. One green piece of paper, one of the many interesting things in there, but this is particularly interesting for me, having lived in the UK. It's a green piece of paper, and it reads as follows. The lists below are given as an aid to the American reader of RSGB books and publications. Both the semiconductors and tubes are plug-in equivalents except where indicated by an asterisk. In this case, the suggested substitute will work in many, but not necessarily all, circuits. And this comes to us from Communications Technology Incorporated, Greenville, New Hampshire. So this is an American attempt to decipher British technical English. Most of it, there's not that much of a language gap here. Having, as I said, lived in London for 4 years, divided by a common language and all that's a bit. Churchill, I think, was a bit over the top. It's not that difficult to figure out. But there were some interesting things here. So let me just read you some extracts from this guide to translation, because they include not only the semiconductors and the tubes, but also some vocabulary. A concentric trimmer is known as a piston capacitor, is known as a concentric trimmer. What we would call Q-dope. Now, you have to be a real bit of a knack victim to know what Q-dope is. It's the goo that you spread on the toroidal coils to get them to stop moving around and changing their values. Doug DeMaul was, I think, offered several low-budget solutions for those in search of the elusive Q-dope. In British technical English, it's known as Durafix. A ferrite core or a tuning slug is known in the UK as a dust core. What Americans would call the ground is called the earth. I mean, that there's no real need for translation there. Troubleshooting in the US is known as fault finding in the UK. A coil form is known as a former. A mixer is known as a frequency changer. Full-scale deflection, brace yourself for this one, FSD. Hey, I thought we were the guys with the acronyms. Remote cutoff in American is known as high slope in the British Isles. High tension or B+ HT. Perspex for our British cousin is what we would call plexiglass. What we call in the U.S. a shield is known in the U.K. as a screen. What we would refer to as regulated, they would call stabilized. Of course, vacuum tube would in the U.K. be known as the valve. We're all familiar with that. Anyway, those were some interesting, I thought, translations from that was contained in the RSGB book. And there's been a couple of others that have come up more related to solder smoke. And this is kind of a delicate topic. When Mike and I first started calling the show Solder Smoke, several of our British friends wrote in and pointed out that the way Americans pronounce solder, we don't say the L. We don't say the L at all. It just comes out as solder smoke. But the British, I suppose with a more refined pronunciation here, actually pronounce the L, and it comes out as solder smoke, solder, something like that. It's very difficult for my American mouth to pronounce it that way. But this is an important distinction, because in British slang, sod or solder, well... This is a family show, guys, so you'll have to go to the online British dictionaries, to British slang dictionaries, to figure out what I'm talking about. But suffice it to say that it's a completely distinct activity from what we're talking about here on this program. Anyway, we were already too far into it at that point, and we stuck with solder smoke. So I hope every time I say that, our British listeners aren't, you know, cringing. Now, here's another one that came up. And this comes from Michael, G3WOE. He writes in, and he uses a term, and I was familiar with this term from my time in London. You know, we've been talking a lot about the knack. And Michael, in his email, uses the term, and I think it's, I must say, I don't think it's a proper use of the term, but I think he was joking around with me a bit here, saying that he is a victim of Dilbert's disease, and he referred to himself as being totally knackered. Well, no, knackered, here's another case where, well, knackered, and I'm sure Michael will agree, does not really refer to someone with a bad case of the knack, although it could. Knackered means, really, it means kind of worn out, tired out. It can also mean broken. If a device or a bit of technical gear is not working properly, you could say it's totally knackered. Or if you yourself are really worn out from a long night at the pub, you can be totally knackered. But let's get this straight. And knackered and the knack have only a very, very tenuous connection there. I guess you could be knackered as the result of the knack if the knack keeps you up late at night trying to fix that doubly balanced modulator that won't modulate in a doubly balanced manner. Then you could be knackered, but it's a bit different. All right, going down the list of news here. Ah, Kanga to the rescue. Bill Kelsey, the guy who runs Kanga USA, was in the news during the last couple weeks. Actually, Bill was out on Lake Michigan on his boat. His wife was there, and they were sailing along and came across some fishermen in trouble. And Bill assisted in the rescue of the fishermen on Lake Michigan. So there was a TV report on that. I haven't posted it up on the blog. I'll try to do that. But I'm sure if you Google it, Kanga, and then just Bill Kelsey, Fisherman Rescue Lake Michigan, it'll come up. And it was a nice report, and Bill was he was a real good sport about it. And I think the only compensation he asked for was that the fishermen henceforth root for Ohio State football. So anyway, it was good to see Kanga to the rescue. It was just unfortunate that he was not able to use a QRP rig to call for help. I'm sorry to report that apparently no QRP rigs were used in the Lake Michigan rescue. But anyway, three cheers for Bill. Bill would receive what Gene Shepard would award. The prize that Gene Shepard would give out would be, and those of you who have been listening to the Shep programs have probably heard these, a brass figlegee with bronze oak leaf palm. So that will be Bill Kelsey of Kanga USA will be the recipient of this week's brass figlegee with bronze oak leaf palm. Congratulations, Bill. Good work. Hey, we spent a lot of time talking about Sprat and other QRP magazines, but there's a magazine that I get here every, I guess it's every other month or every quarter. I got the September 2008 issue here of Air and Space magazine from the Smithsonian. I'm sure a lot of you guys are getting this magazine. If you're not, you should think about it. It's about I guess you could say it's about the knack. It's about the aeronautical version of the knack. The guys who write these articles and put the magazine together and read it obviously have the aero version of the knack. It's related to what we do. They're interested in restoration. They're interested in the technical aspects of flight and space travel and There have been a number of articles over the years involving ham radio. So yeah, these guys are, in their own way, knack victims. And this, the September issue had, I thought, two particularly interesting, well, several things in there that were just real interesting. First, there's a contest out there. I hadn't heard about this one, but it's the Google Back to the Moon competition. Google is offering a huge amount of money. I guess it's huge, but in Google terms, perhaps not that huge. But apparently, the contest is to the contest prize will be won by whichever private sector enterprise. We're not talking about governments here. Private sector enterprise that can send a remote-controlled probe back to the moon, drive it around a bit, and take some pictures. There are a number of people out there who are very seriously involved in doing this and think that they can do it. And one of them, and I thought this was really cool, because we just passed the anniversary, is going to go back and visit the Apollo 11 landing site. And they plan to drive their remote-controlled, camera-equipped rover up to the Apollo 11 landing site and take some pictures and see how the site looks and see how all the items that were left behind are faring after all these years. It was July 20th, 1969. I'm sure most of you guys remember it. I was 10 years old and remember distinctly. My mom is here visiting with us this week, and we mentioned the anniversary because I watched it on TV with her as a little guy, and inspiring stuff. Obviously, the article talks about how the condition that they expect to find some of this stuff. They don't think that the flag will have survived because of the material. They think it'll have been broken down by the constant bombardment by, I guess, by the ultraviolet light. But a lot of the other things that they left there will, of course, still be there. They think the footprints will be pretty much unchanged over 40 years. I thought this was a nice touch. I didn't know this, but that right before Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin blasted off, they left a few items there on the moon. And one thing that they left behind kind of a medallion honoring the Apollo 1 astronauts, Grissom, Chaffee, and White, who were killed in the Apollo 1 fire. And they also left behind a kind of a memento honoring Yuri Gagarin, the first guy to fly in space, and to one of the Russians who was killed in spaceflight. And so I thought that was a nice touch there in the depths of the Cold War to recognize that the other team had been doing some valiant and great things in space too. So I thought that was a nice touch. They also left behind a gold oak leaf. Olive branch as a sign of peace. Again, you wouldn't expect that kind of thing in the environment of 1969, but a nice touch. So I thought that was pretty interesting. This brings us to the another thing that was sort of Russian related project mentioned in Air and Space. The Russian space program has apparently gotten a major shot in the arm. The Russians, of course, are making a lot of money now because of the energy prices and a major energy exporter. And a lot of that, some of that money apparently is making it to the Russian space program. And they are planning a sample return mission to one of the moons of Mars. I think it's Phobos, if I'm pronouncing that right. They're going to send a probe there, land on this moon, grab a sample, and bring it back to Earth. that's pretty neat. That's a pretty neat trick, you know. And it was real interesting to read about this. These are the kinds of things that you can read about in Air and Space. And anyway, I thought that was all pretty cool. Lots of other little tidbits. It's in there on the Apollo 11 subject. One of the things that Neil and Buzz left behind was a laser reflector. And, you know, I think we've all heard about how they have used that reflector over the years. And this is one of the ways they dispute the bonkers notion that this was all some sort of a hoax. they point out that they are shooting lasers and it's being reflected by something. Of course, it's being reflected by the reflector that they left up there. I read in this week's Air and Space that the folks at UCAL San Diego are still several times a week firing lasers at this thing and getting the bounce back. However, they say that over time the signal strength has started to drop off, and they think that something is causing the kind of the front panel of the reflector to get kind of scarred up or coarse. There might be some, I don't know whether it's dust or the impacts of micrometeorites, but for some reason the signal strength is down. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting that they're still firing lasers at this thing, and it must be neat to sit there at UCAL San Diego and push the send button and wait for the echo. Good stuff. Let's see what else we have on the list. I put a new feature on the blog. I have the solder slides. I'm sure you guys have seen those. Those are in the kind of the upper right hand corner of the blog page, the solder slides, and those are basically my pictures or pictures that guys have sent in. If you want something included in that, send me the picture and I'll put it up there in the slideshow. We've got Marconi. I put up Richard Feynman. We've got Wes is up there. Doug DeMaw, Dilbert, all the important QRP guys. Hiram Percy Maxim is there. All this and pictures of rigs, pictures of antennas. I hope you find them enjoyable. You can, if you put your mouse over the slideshow, you can make the pictures bigger and you can control them and move back and forth. And there are captions there explaining what they are. They're visible if you click on the slideshow. But there's another slideshow further down. If you scroll down the page a bit on the right, you'll see what we're now calling the QRP guest slideshow. And the first QRP guest slideshow is that of Steve, N0TU. I came across Steve's slideshow. It's up. It's publicly available via the Picasa, the Google Picasa web album system, and I was able to link to it and put Steve's pictures there on the Solder Smoke page. Really great pictures, good stuff. And one of the things that really caught my eye was Steve's version of the Tuna Tin 2. The Tuna Tin was, of course, the Doug DeMaw rig using the 2N2222 transistors built on a tuna can. Very, very popular, and it has gone through, I think, several rebirths, and rightly so. This one was really cool. It's a good picture of it, and they had this label. I didn't realize they had this label that you put along the kind of the outside of the tuna can, and it was a little listing of all the states so that you could work all states, and as you worked each state, you could X them off with so the Tuna Tin 2 with a worked all states label. I thought that was really neat. That kind of caught my attention. So anyway, take a look at at Steve's photo album there. I think you'll enjoy it. Our advertisement of the week, I've already mentioned this, but it's Dan Small Parts. Yeah, I've got a link to Dan Small Parts on the Google page and on my blog on soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Take a look at Dan's catalog. I think you'll find a lot of stuff there that you'll really like and will help you in your struggles with the knack. And like I said, help Dan out. He's been good to us, and we should help him out. That's this week's Solder Smoke advertising segment. What else?
It's time for...
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
I love them.
Indeed.
Yeah, Solder Smoke Mailbag. The mail, we got a respectable amount of mail here, although a lot of folks are on vacation, obviously. Randy, K4QO, wrote in on the origins of the clubs with no rules idea. The and he points out that some of the early users of this disorganized organizational model, or the no organizational model, include the Scorpions out there in Arizona, also the Nightlights. I think the Nightlights are from North Carolina, and of course the Flying Pigs. Great stuff, and yeah, no rules. I think that's what my son has on his skateboard. The same spirit is alive. I think it's terrific. I really enjoyed that kind of no bureaucracy rule in the Nova Northern Virginia QRP Club, so I'm all for it. We certainly have no rules here at Solder Smoke. On a similar topic, Paul G0WAT writes in, and he is the one who's organizing the kind of the home counties QRP club in the London area, and they are known as the Hedgehogs, I guess. Well, you know, you've got the Flying Pigs. These guys are known as the Hedgehogs, and folks, I am honored to report that I am Hedgehog number 4. I'm awaiting a certificate, Paul. I want to put that up on the wall here in the shack. Hedgehog number 4. Thanks a lot, Paul. Appreciate it. Good luck with the club. Hey, speaking of the shack, I put a picture up of the workbench, the Rome version of it. It doesn't look very much different from the London version of it, but I thought you guys would be interested, so I put that up on the webpage. I also put up, and this is another Solder Smoke mailbag item, Steve, VE7SL, came through with the ID. He identified the Mystery Military Radio. This is the one that we found at the charity shop here in the Trastevere section of Rome. And I've been kind of scratching my head trying to figure out what it was. The identification plate had been removed. But through my description of it, Steve was able to figure it out. And he sent me a picture, and through the picture, I was able to confirm that we are indeed talking about a BC-312. It looks like a BC-348, but it's not. It's a receiver. It's a BC-312, frequently used by the U.S. Marine Corps in Jeep-mounted radios. It was the receiver portion of a receiver-transmit pair that was often on the back of Jeeps. I think it's a little bit post-World War II, and I understand that it was used by U.S. forces in Italy and later by the Italian Army. So there's probably quite a few of these things floating around. We have found one. I've passed the information on to my friend Giorgio, Italy Zero Yankee Radio. So now he knows what we're talking about, and he's familiar with the rig and may, in fact, pick it up. So I have a picture of I have the picture that Steve sent to me on the Solder Smoke blog, so you guys might want to check it out. Our version does not have the fungicide. Steve's picture included this big red label on the front of it saying, caution, rig contains fungicide. I guess the fungus problem wasn't so severe in this part of the world, so our version was apparently not treated with the fungicide, which is, I imagine, a good thing. Giovanni, ZL2GX with the Giovanni expected an Italian call, but Giovanni's down there in New Zealand. He's been there for a while. His parents moved there, and so he's a long-time resident of ZL, he's involved in a lot of QRP ham radio and NAC-related projects. But has been busy. He's currently finishing up his PhD. So good luck with that, Giovanni, and thanks for the note. KC0PET. Just purchased Experimental Methods in RF Design. Always a good move. I'm sure you'll enjoy the book, and take heed of all the good advice therein. Good luck with that, KC0PET. Dave, N5XL, writes in that and warns that that there is a worldwide shortage of yet another raw material. I know some of you guys are out there, a lot of you guys are out there worried about oil and gasoline and that particular resource, but, well, I must report now there's something else for us to worry about. Tantalum. Tantalum is in short supply, and worldwide tantalum prices are going up. I'm not suggesting this is an investment opportunity. No, don't cash out the 401k and buy up tantalum. Don't do that. I had a similar thought when I saw the prices of solid state design for radio amateurs. Sell the stocks, buy SSDRA. No, not a good move. But Dan does report that tantalum prices are up, and this could affect the capacitors that we're using. Just by chance, right after I got his email, I was looking at Dan's small parts catalog, and he has special deals on tantalum capacitors. So for those of you in an investment frame of mind, I guess Dan does provide the opportunity for you to go long in tantalum. There you go. We talked a bit earlier about Michael and G3WOE and his use of the term knackered. He also writes in that he thinks that he's been listening to Gene Shepherd, to the Gene Shepherd episodes referred to here on Solder Smoke. It's kind of an interesting thing. I've been getting a lot of mail from UK radio amateurs who seem to like Gene Shepherd's style and approach. It's not really what I'd expect, because Shepherd is Shepherd is really very, it's really Americana. I mean, his discussions of Indiana, and then, well, let's face it, Shepherd became a New Yorker. I mean, he was a bit of a beatnik, living in Greenwich Village and doing the New York. You know, he was a kind of a stand-up guy in some of the New York comedy clubs and things like that. So he became very much a New Yorker, but somehow he resonates with our British listeners, which is a great thing. I'm glad they're enjoying it. And Michael, G3WOE, says he thinks he can hear some of Shep's influence on me. Well, I have no pretensions to get anywhere near close to the work of the master there. Shepherd is really in a much higher league, of course, but to our humble efforts here. But thanks for that, Michael. And I suppose Shep did influence me. I spent a lot of time as a kid listening to him with my father, as my father chopped up the carrots and helped make dinner up there in the kitchen in Congers, New York. So I guess Shep did have an influence on me during formative years. Also, I guess the business about him being a New Yorker, if you hear some similarities in speech, it might be just New York coming through in, with both people. Michael's also been inspired by mention here on Solder Smoke of the famous BidX 20 project. And they have a club effort going now at his QTH, and they've got 20 new BidX 20s under construction. So congratulations on that, Michael, and I guess that merits a word of thanks to Farhan, the designer of the BidX 20, and all the folks who've been working on that project, and the whole BidX 20 community doing great things for homebrew. And I'm glad that Solder Smoke has helped spread the word a little bit about that great rig. I want to build one of these days. Let's see. I mentioned earlier Michael Alpha 1 Tango Juliet. We hope that he's working on the Vermont version of a QRSS transmitter using a tunnel diode or something exotic like that. That'll be really, really interesting. Thanks for the note, Michael, and thanks again for the book. Alan Jones was W8OAJ. He's now got a new call sign, N8WQ, and Alan, a longtime Solder Smoke listener and NAC victim, is now working on his own QRSS beacon that may be on the air soon from the Fort Bliss, Texas area. Thanks, Alan, and good luck with the project. Just a few other things to mention here before we wrap up. I talked about the new Gesta album by N0TU. Check that out. I think you might like it. Also put, you'll see along the right-hand portion of the blog page a little bit further down, a new kind of map there called a Frapper map. And it notes the location of people who visit the blog site. It's a little bit more detailed than the Grabber or the other map that I have further up. I thought that you guys might find it interesting. It's there. I'll leave it there for a while. We'll see if it works. And finally, I'd encourage you to subscribe to the blog. It makes it easier to get alerted when we put something up there. There's instructions on how to subscribe in the upper right-hand corner, right next to the lead story there. If you just click on, you can pick one of several different ways to subscribe to the Solder Smoke blog. And this will allow you to be alerted whenever something new is placed up there. Otherwise, the blogs are a bit of a pain in the neck because you have to go back and check all the time to see if something new has been posted. If you subscribe, you'll get some sort of alert, and you'll know that there's new Solder Smoke news out there. All right, guys, that brings us to about 51 minutes. Time to wrap up. I hope everybody's having a great summer. Have a great one. Have a safe one. We're getting into the prime summertime season. Italy pretty much shuts down during the month of August, especially during the last 2 weeks. And Rome has already become noticeably quieter. We are we'll be here during the month of August. We'll probably take off during the first week of September when the vacation spots aren't quite so busy. And I think we're going to head out to Sardinia. So I'll give you a report from Sardinia. But we'll have another one here in 2 weeks or so. Again, have a great summer, and 7-3 from Rome.